Welcome back to Troubleshooting Agile. Hi there, Jeffrey.
Hi, Squirrel.
So you were off doing all kinds of interesting things last week with some friends of yours, I think, and investigating lots of fun topics. What did you learn? That's always my favorite question about these things.
Well, we learned a few things, but I say the funniest thing that came up has to do with this joke that I've heard before, and I don't know if you've come across it, which is it's maybe not the funniest joke in the world, but it if you're trapped in a certain type of company, what can pass for humor, which is the sort of like, well, how does company strategy work? Well, it's really easy. You just show up and say like, are we currently centralized? Okay, great. We need to decentralize. Are we decentralized? Okay, we need to centralize. That these are the kind of two big moves that, you know, a new executive team coming in are going to do. Whatever we're doing before, we're going to have to do the opposite now. And so,
well, my father was an executive at the Aluminium Company of America, and he told me about that phenomenon. So this is not new.
Yeah. The aha moment, though, that came through is that actually there can be times where that switch, that move from decentralization to centralization, can actually make sense. It can actually be the right thing. And the point of context we had for this came up as we were talking about the idea of centralizing services within an enterprise. You know, so something like saying, you know, we have a bunch of different divisions here. They each have ways that they, you know, maybe manage their databases in the cloud, something like that. Do we really need six different versions of that for the six different divisions? You know, probably not.
And the acquisition that we made last month, should yes. They keep going with their method? No, it would make sense in some cases to centralize those functions because they're commodified. They're kind of conquered. Yes. They're understood. So in those circumstances, a centralizing win makes sense. But there are other cases where the wind blowing the other direction, where having things go from central to decentralized is more successful.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? And this example of managing the databases is a good one and a very topical, because we're talking now about centralizing things and managing databases in the cloud. You know, what should we be doing with our databases in the cloud? But 15 years ago, 12 years ago, we would have known how to manage the databases on-prem, you know, on our own hardware. And at that time, though, so probably at that time, it was centralized. But then something happened, which is there was a big move to get things off of the on-prem solutions and into the cloud for a good reason, which is, you know, businesses got tired of saying, well, when can we get that new application? Well, when we get the new hardware? How long will that take? Well, it'll take us, you know, 3 months. And I told you that, and you said, well, that's a very short timeline.
Oh, yeah, I had people take a year to get it. Yeah. So
yeah,
the centralization really was a bottleneck, was killing innovation and learning and ideas in organizations. And the idea that you could push a button and get a server and it could do stuff for you, which we all now think of as just the way things are, was absolutely new and radical and decentralizing. So that decentralizing push was really helpful. But now people are starting to centralize again.
Yeah, that's right. And we were able to talk through this in terms of one of my favorite tools, which is Wordly mapping. And in Wordly mapping, they have this idea of climactic patterns, that things go from invention where and innovation, where it's very high uncertainty, and then they move to increasing levels of certainty until you end up at commodification. And in the idea here, in the kind of the aha moment, was, hey, in those early days when you had centralized on-prem management and then you needed to move to being in the cloud and a new way of doing things, well, you might have thought, well, the natural thing to do is to have our database experts become our cloud experts. But actually, that would have been really inefficient in the sense of how much uncertainty there was. There was a lot of benefit in suddenly having 6 or 10 or 12 divisions all experimenting in parallel. Like they were, in my head, they're like all searching the solution space and trying to come up with better solutions. Whereas the central group, they might do a good job of it, but they're only going to be searching a fraction of the solution space, and you're kind of then limited in your learning by having fewer people involved. So the aha moment was, hey, in times of high uncertainty, decentralization is really useful because we get to learn in parallel. We get to learn more per unit time than when if we were to be centralized.
But then again, when we've kind of conquered the territory, when we understand yes. it well, and there's not a lot of uncertainty because, hey, everybody knows how to build a e-commerce website, which is true today, right? You just set up Shopify and yeah. connect it to a few things and click a few buttons, and now you can start selling your t-shirts or whatever it is. That wasn't true in 1999. I remember it took a crack team of incredibly brilliant people to figure out how to take Visa cards. So that has shifted from high uncertainty, how on earth do you ever get anybody to pay you on the web, to let's just click some buttons and make it happen. And that centralization has been beneficial because we conquered the territory. The standard yeah. analogy for this, which is very violent, and as a pacifist, I'm not a fan of it, that the standard analogy for this is commandos, infantry, and police. And then the kind of more peaceful version is pioneers, settlers, and town planners. They have a kind of progression of the people in your team from highly, highly decentralized, highly learning-focused people who are completely chaotic to eventually people who have a bunch of rules and laws and a big, thick book of bureaucratic procedures.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what was the kind of the aha moment then about how this works. And of course, your pioneers, settlers, and town planners, that is, it's also there explicitly in Wordly mapping, where they make that point that at different phases of uncertainty, you'll want different approaches. You know, they think about it as different aptitudes or skill sets. I think people are very flexible and can take on these different roles if they're clear, but they might have strong preferences between them. You know, the people who are natural town planners are probably not the same as who your natural pioneers are.
Absolutely. Now, there's two things that I want to warn listeners about, because they might rush off and say, great, now all we have to do is measure our uncertainty, and then we know whether to centralize or decentralize. But there are some dangers there that I've seen. The first danger is that there's a natural bias toward thinking that you have more certainty than you do. And because it's much more comforting to think that things are certain and understood and that you really have got them. And your brain kind of tends to reinforce that. We talk sometimes about thinking fast and slow and how your brain tends to grab the most coherent story. The most coherent story is, I'm right, I understand things, and how I see it is the right way. So I want to warn listeners that if you think you're in the centralization, really deeply understood domain where things are really clear, you probably aren't. So you have to ask yourself for a lot more evidence that you're that certain. You know, I was mentioning e-commerce websites and so on. It could be that you're thinking, gosh, all I have to do is set up an e-commerce website to sell my t-shirts. Well, if t-shirts are out of fashion and everybody is wearing, I don't know, overalls, then maybe your market is not where you think it is. Maybe your t-shirt supplier is about to go out of business. There's probably more sources of uncertainty than you know. And so be very cautious about concluding that you have a highly well understood environment, that you're operating with high certainty, because the odds are you aren't.
Yeah. You know what? That actually even came up in our discussion. And again, in the context of Wordly mapping, which is Wordly mapping, we just talked the horizontal axis, but the vertical axis is how close you are to your client. And the things that are higher on the Wordly map are things that are close to the client, and the kind of things like, you know, maybe what inventory you have, you know, do we have a t-shirt sizer or a coverall sizer? But then the things that are further away are more abstracted, and you get down to more things like, you know, the database layer, you know, the compute layer and things like that. Those are not very user visible and probably face less uncertainty. So I really like this idea you're saying, is that the environment you are in can be very dynamic. And so there's probably some things that you have that are while you might have some things that are very well known and centralized, don't go too far with that. Don't think that just because you have some things that are well known, everything is well known. And I especially like the idea of remembering that of the market as a source of uncertainty, even if your technology is pretty well understood.
And don't forget things like your skills and your management capacity and your government. And, you know, there's an awful lot of sources of uncertainty. So look at lots of places. The other warning I want to give our listeners who might want to apply this heuristic is that there are more opportunities to be decentralized than you think. If you notice a bias here, it's because I'm an anarchist, right? Because I believe things being decentralized is generally better. I have a bias in the other direction. I admit my bias, but let me tell you about a really interesting idea that I'm toying with and learning about and not fully understanding yet. And that comes from a very clever person named Dave Snowden, who came up with a whole bunch of tools which go by the terrible Welsh name of Kinevan, which we'll spell in the show notes. And he's got a kind of further idea beyond this. We've done this many times on the podcast, so listen back if you want details or look at Wikipedia. But the thing that he's done to go kind of beyond this framework that he has is to start to build what he calls entangled trios. And I haven't quite got the entangled part clear yet, but the trio part is you get people who are roughly about three teams of three, but you get many of them, and they're quite different people. So, for example, he's got a case where he puts a teenager and a grandparent and a civil servant, somebody who works in a city. And all three of those are a trio, and then he gets a bunch of these trios. And what they do is go out in the community and try to deal with a community problem, like too much litter on the street, or we don't have enough houses for people, or kids don't have something fun to do. And he gives them £500 each and says, go and experiment, go and try this. That's highly, highly decentralized. I mean, how much more decentralized could you get? And how different is that from how cities and governments, which tend to be highly centralized, think they have lots of certainty? The politicians tell you they know the answer if you just vote for them. But this is the opposite approach. And he's having really good success with this kind of experimentation because many of them fail. Of course, many of them don't solve the problem, but a few do. And then you throw a lot more money at those solutions and you've had a very, very cheap learning experience. So the puzzle I have for listeners is how do we do this in software? And I haven't quite got the answer yet, but I just wanted to illustrate that you can go a lot further in decentralization than you think, and you can learn a lot more quickly than you might suspect at first.
Yeah, fantastic. I was actually talking to someone just earlier today about alternative funding models for internal innovation, and I might think about the entangled trio as one possible approach for that.
Yeah, the puzzle for me, and I'd love for listeners to tell us about this. We'll tell you how to get in touch in a second. How do we get our customers to experiment in that way? How do we get completely non-technical people who never write any code to try new stuff and move around buttons on the screen and organize their data differently and visualize things in new ways? I think we've had that in Excel and tools like that, these low-code tools. Maybe that gives us something there. I don't know the answer, but I just think that there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot more room for decentralization than people think because there's such a bias towards centralization. But that's just the anarchist in me talking. I'd love to hear from listeners who think differently.
Absolutely. Well, if they want to get in touch with us with some ideas, what should they do?
Well, they should go to agileconversations.com and they can find their material by us, like our book and videos and free toolkits and all kinds of good stuff like that. Plus my home address. So come and visit me. You know, I had someone visit me last week, actually come out here. So come and visit me in the wilds of England or more traditional methods like email and Twitter. And I'm apparently on Instagram now. And Jeffrey, I don't know what stuff you're on, but lots of ways to get in touch with us. And we really like hearing from our listeners. As well, of course, another way to keep in touch with us is to come back again next week when there'll be another edition of Troubleshooting Agile. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Squirrel.